22. We're holding on page Yud Beis in Sota, the second line from the bottom, middle of Os Lamed. We started learning yesterday about Avshalom. He was very proud of his supernatural hair, and he ended up getting hanged by it. And then we said that afterwards, when he was killed, then David davened for him and got him out of Gehenna, and according to one opinion, got his head and body reattached, and according to the other opinion, got him into Gan Eden. So now the Gemara is going to continue gashing a few other psukim in connection with Avshalom. Pasuk says that after it describes how Avshalom was killed, it says Avshalom lokach, Avshalom had taken vayatziv lebechayev es matzeves asher be'emek hamelech. He'd set up during his lifetime a monument in the valley of the king. We'll explain in a second what this lokach means. Ki omar ein li bein, because he said, I have no son, ba'avur hazkir shmi, that my name should be remembered. Vayikra lo matzeves al shmoi, so he called this monument by his name. Vayikra lo yad Avshalom ader yemezen. To this very day, it's called Yad Avshalom. There is actually outside Yerushalayim in Nachal Kidron, by the bottom of Har HaZeisim, there is a building over there that they call Yad Avshalom, which maybe is the one that we're talking about over here, although experts say that it seems the style of it seems to date from a much later time. There is a big hole in the front of it, and they say that people would, assuming that it was Avshalom's Matseva, they would throw stones at it for that he deserves that for the way he treated his father. What? Page bottom of page Yud Beis now the top page 24 in Sota. There is, by the way, different Mephoshim argue. Does the Pasuk imply that they took his body? Now, the Pasuk says after they killed him, it says they threw him into a pit. They threw his body into a pit there in the forest where the battle had taken place. Does the Pasuk mean that afterwards they took his body from there and buried it by this Matseva? Or does it mean that, no, in the end he didn't even get that and it just remained an empty Matseva? Different Mephoshim, the Radak, I think says his body was buried there. Ababanel and Malbim say that, no, it never was. Anyway. So let's focus on that word, my lokach. What's this pasuk Vav Shalom? What's this word Vav Shalom lokach? What did he take it? What exactly did he take? So Omer Shlokish Shalokach Metach Rala Atzmai. He took a bad deal for himself. So in other words, he took for himself. Rashi says two Gersois, in Rashi he took a Srorah Azois. He took this leadership position during his lifetime that he planned to become king, or he took this Matseva during his lifetime, as the case may be, and he set it up. But really, it was Be'emek HaMelech, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain. It was based on a deep idea that Hashem had of how things are going to happen. So he didn't realize that what he's accomplishing over there is going to wind up, is just going to wind up fulfilling what Hashem had planned all along. But the lokach means to lokach mekach ralasmo. You have a similar thing. It says about Korach, also by Yikach Korach, and it's the same thing Rashi mentions over there. Shalokach mekach ralasmo. He took a bad deal for himself. So a couple of them, Foshim over here, deal with details within it. For the Rif over here gives a long explanation that basically what the Gemara wants to say over here is, and how it's dowshing it with the pasuk, is like this. We said Avshalom, one big thing that he was guilty of was violating his father's pilagshim. He knew of the Zera that the Gemara is going to mention over here, Pasuk, that the Hinini make him alacha ra mi besecha, that Hashem is going to cause that there's going to be evil that comes out against David from his own household, which came true over here when Avshalom rebelled against him and violated his pelagshim, which also Nasan HaNavi says that in that Nevuah. So here the Rif understands that Avshalom actually did consciously intend to fulfill that nevuah, but it was mekach ra la'atzmo because he wound up the worse for it. In a way, it's a mitigating thing because he knew that there's a nevuah about it. But on the other hand, it's still, you know, the Eibush gives a person bechiru chofshes. It didn't have to be him. You know, al derech like you have the famous machloikus of the Rambam and the Ravid. Why were the Mitzriim punished? Because the Eibush had foretold. So you have the reason because they're not doing it because the Eibush said so. They're doing it for their own selfish reasons. Is the Rambam's reason. Meanwhile, you have the Ravid's reason is because they oppressed and persecuted the Jewish people much more than they were supposed to just to fulfill the Gzeira. So yeah, over here, if we say that Avshalom consciously is doing what it says in the Nevuah, then that would fit better than that. That wouldn't fit so well with the Rambam's position over there, because there the Mitzvim are not doing it because of the Nevuah, whereas here he is. On the other hand, if you say that the fact is a person has Bechira Chavshis, then we could still say, listen, why did he have to choose to be the one through who this serious Avera is going to be done? We're going to have a certain extent of Bechira Chofshes, otherwise how could they be punishable for their actions? They don't have the same degree of Bechira Chofshes as a Yid has, but they... That you have to be in Pesukim that say that. The Eidusha says, in the Novi says, in Eidusha's name, in Zechariah, Asher Ani Katsakti Ma'at Vehema Ozru L'Ra. That I was angry at the Jewish people only a little bit, and they helped out and made things much worse. So yeah, they have, I mean, everything's in the Eidusha's hands, but in other words, there's an amount that they might have to do, basically, to be Yotzer the Gzera, and then there's what they do beyond that, which didn't have to be part of the original Gzera, and therefore they're punishable for that. So when we say it's Matsevas Hashem Be'Emek HaMelech, we're saying this monument that he set up in Emek HaMelech. So the simple meaning, it means just in the valley, outside Yerushalayim or something. But Amar Rav Chanina Bar Papa means Be'etza Amukah Shal Malka Shal Olam. There was a deep counsel, there was a deep plan that Hashem, the king of the world, had in making all this happen. Shenemar, or Dichtiv, earlier, after the whole affair of Bathsheba, Nosan HaNavi comes to David and tells him all for it, and he tells him, Hinni Mekim Alecha Ra Mibesecha, I'm going to set up against you evil from your own household. So now, this was fulfilled, so Matzeves, Rashi points out, the words of Hashem can be called Matzeves, like the Olam Hashem Zvorcha Nitzav Vashamayim. So therefore, so it means that this was set up by Hashem to happen this way. In fact, the Gemara tells elsewhere, and in Brachas, like this, you have the capital that David wrote at that time, Mizmor LeDavid, Bevorchem et Nav Shalom Bnoi. The Gemara asks, why Mizmor? Why is he rejoicing and happy and singing over it? And the answer is, the Gemara says, because after all, Mibesecha doesn't have to be one of his own sons. It could have been an Eved or something. And an Eved, who's no blood relation of David, would not necessarily have any Rachmanis on him. Like this, David thinks to himself, it's my own son. On the one hand, yeah, it's a tremendous chutzpah of him. On the other hand, it means that I'm in a much better position because he's much less likely to actually want to kill me. In fact, like we talked about yesterday or the day before, what the Malbim says about it, that in fact Avshalom's agenda was not really so much to kill David, just to get him to abdicate. It was Achitofel who particularly had it in for David. So therefore, David is recognizing that with the Mizmer. So this is what we're saying. This is all part of the Eidusha's deep plan to clean up what had happened over there with Bathsheba. There is, by the way, a vort on this also, the Musudika vort, that the Pasuk is also hinting at the source of what led Avshalom the wrong way in the first place is this idea that he wanted to make a name for himself. And that kind of motivation, that can bring a person to tremendous heights, but it can also cause him to go completely wrong, and that's what happened with Avshalom. In a similar vein, you have a similar kind of thing where the Pasuk mentions something that took place in an Emek, and we doubt in the same kind of thing. The Pasuk says about Yaakov when he sends off Yosef to find his brothers, and he sent him from the valley of Hebron. Now, Hebron is on a mountain. What do you mean, Emek Hebron? So geographically, the fact is there is an Emek over there. You visit the old city of Hebron over there, Maris Machpelah, in that area. There is a valley not far from there, but the Gemara is doubting. For one thing, why does it need to tell us? Why is it important for us to know that Davke sent him from the valley? Omer Abchanina Bar Papa, same idea. The Eitzah Mukah Shal Oseh Tzadik Akover B'Hebron. It means that here you have the deep idea, the deep counsel that comes from that tzaddik Avraham Avinu who's buried in Hebron. Shenema, as you had many years earlier, 200 years earlier, the Brisbane Absarim, Yodaya Teda, Kigeri Yazaracha Be'eretz Lelahem, you should know that your children will be strangers in a land that's not theirs. And now, Yosef being sent from Emet Hebron was the beginning of the story that led to the Jewish people going down to Mitzrayim. Why are we calling it the Eitzah of the Tzaddik? The Medrash says that the Eidushta gave Avraham a choice. You want that your children should have Golos or should have Gehenim. And then the Eidushta convinced Avraham to choose Golos for his children. And that's why you have Yodaya Teda. So therefore it's called Eitzah Mukah Shal Oseh Tzadik, because Avraham was the one who ultimately agreed that there should be a Golos. So in other words, we see that it's the same kind of thing, that it says that it's from an Emek. And it could mean geographically an Emek, but it also means the Inyan that there was a deep plan that Hashem had going on over here. The Rif explains in some detail that actually it's not just that there's a connection between them in terms of this word Emek, but there's also a similar kind of thing that Avshalom thought that he's going to take the kingship for himself, figuring he figures I don't have a son who's worthy to succeed me, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. So therefore, I need to make a name for myself, and the way that I'm going to do that is by rebelling and becoming and then forcing myself as David's successor. But really Hashem was orchestrating the whole thing, and eventually Avshalom was killed for it. So in the same way, so Hashem made all that happen, in other words, for David's benefit, so that, again, the making Malacha Ram of Issachar should be accomplished by somebody who was less likely to harm him, and the same way with Avraham and the Golos, it was all done for the benefit of Avraham and the Jewish people. So now, the Pasuk is saying, Ki Omer Ein Li Bein. So now, Avshalom is saying, I have no son. What do you mean, Vele Havele Bonim? What do you mean he didn't have sons? Vaksiv, the Pasuk says, Ve'yivodu l'Avshalom Shloisha Bonim. Avshalom had three sons, Uvasachas Ushma Tomer, and he had a daughter named Tomer. His sister was Tomer, that's the one that who got violated by Amnon, and the whole story developed from there, but he had a daughter who he named also Tomer. Anyway, so he had sons. The answer is, Amar Abiyat Chabar Dimi Shlahi Yoled Ben Hogun Lamalchus. He had sons, but none of them are suitable for the kingship. So when he says, Ein Mi Ben, it doesn't mean that I don't have biological sons, but none of them are going to be, I can see that none of them have it in them to be a king. And therefore I have to memorialize my name in some other way. Like we talked about yesterday, actually, Rabbi Yaakov Emden makes a point based on Psukim and Melochim and Divrei Yomim that a daughter of his, whether it's the same daughter, Tamar, under the Pasuk calls her Macha, so whether it's the same woman under a different name, whether it's a daughter of one of his sons or whatever, actually married Rechavam and became then, and through them, he's the ancestor of the rest of the Malcha Yehuda. Anyway, so that's one answer. Rav Chista, Amar Rav Chista gives a different answer. Gmiri, we have the Kabbalah, called Asurf Tfuase Shachavere, anybody who burns somebody else's grain, Einim Aniyach Bein LeYosha, he's not going to leave a son to succeed him, to inherit him. So Midah Keneged Midah, in other words, even Yaakov says, you know, this poor fellow put in a tremendous amount of effort to planting his field, and then another person goes and burns it, so therefore he deserves that his own seed, that his own children, that his own children get cut off. And in fact, Mephoshim say, on the Pasuk, that in Pasuk Pshat, that's what it means. He had those three sons, but then they all died in his lifetime. Where do we see that he burnt somebody's grain? The Eel Kalya Lidi Yoyov. Now, what happened was, earlier, Avshalom had burnt Yoyov's field. What happened, what happened was like this. After Amnon had violated Tomer, the Pasuk describes Avshalom bided his time, he hated Amnon, he wouldn't talk to him at all. 2 years passed, and Avshalom finds his opportunity and kills Amnon. And then David is very angry at him, and Avshalom runs away to his grandfather, Talmai Melech Geshur. Yoyov is very concerned. Avshalom is there for 3 years. Yoyov is very concerned. Avshalom is living there in a Goyish country, and he's going to end up being lost to the Jewish people altogether. So he wants to convince David to call for Avshalom to come back, to tell him that he's safe to come back. David didn't want to. So Yoyov orchestrates a whole thing over there involving an Isha Chachama, a wise woman. He tells her to go to David and do a whole play act of a case involving one brother killing another, and eventually it would be a marshal for the story with Amnon and Avshalom. Kitzur Maaseh, finally David says, you know what, fine, let Amnon come back. And so Yoyov goes, so Yoyov goes to Geshur and brings Avshalom back. But still, David is angry enough still with Avshalom that he says, I don't want to see him. So 2 years pass, the Pasuk says, and Avshalom is living in Yerushalayim, and the whole time he can't see his father. So he's getting really upset about it. So he tells Yoyov, he sends messengers several times to Yoyov, saying, "New, get me an audience with the king." And Yoyov keeps on ignoring him, knowing that, listen, David wouldn't want to see him anyway. So now Avshalom decides to force the issue. By Yoyomer Avshalom al Avodah, Avshalom says, doesn't say Avshalom in the Pasuk, but whatever, it's talking about Avshalom. He says to his servants, "Ru'u chelkas Yoyov el Yodi, look, there's that section of field of Yoyov that's next to mine. The loy shums to Odom, and he has barley growing over there. L'chuvati sua ba'esh for them, go set it on fire." And sure enough, the Pasuk says that they did that. Now, when Yoyov comes to Avshalom and says, "What do you think you're doing over here? Your servants are burning my field." Then Avshalom says, "You know what? Now I have you in front of me where I want you. Take me to the king, or else, basically."
But Yoyov's trying to help him.
That's the thing. He figured that Yoyov's not trying hard enough, or something. I don't know. Whatever. That's why he figured this way to force Yoyov to come to him. Like this, Yoyov is every time going to stall and say, you know what, I don't want to. So like that.
I'm lost. Yoyov is trying to help
Avshalom. Yoyov is trying to help Avshalom. Because now that Avshalom is back in Yerushalayim, now when he, every time he sends to Yoyov, he came back. But now that he's back there for 2 years, he's not seeing David, plus the 3 years he had been in Geshur. So it's already 5 years since he had seen his father. And now he keeps on sending messengers to Yoyov, "Can you get me an audience with the king?" And every time Yoyov ignores him, so he decides to, he got upset. So the point is, therefore, so we see that he burnt Yoyov's grain, and for that, we're saying, for that, Rav Chista is saying, for that, he didn't have children who survive him. Maharsha points out an interesting vort in it as well. The expression "Eini Maniach Ben LeYoshei," if it just means that his children are going to die as a punishment for it, then just say "Eini Maniach the base Bonav Nesim B'Chayev" or something. So he says like this: ultimately, Avshalom was murdered by Malchus. And a murdered B'malchus, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, his property is forfeit to the king's treasury. His children don't inherit it. So in that sense, his Eini Maniach Ben LeYoshei, literally, he had no sons to inherit him, in the sense, even if his sons did survive him, they didn't inherit any of his property, because as a murdered B'malchus, it all was forfeited to David's treasury. Okay, so that's that with Avshalom. So here we had gone through the Mishnah, given a few examples of Midah Kedegen Midah as far as Poronus, where we had that by Sota, everything that happens to is Midah Kedegen Midah, and the same thing with Shimshon, and the same thing with that, and the same thing with Avshalom. So now the Mishnah continues, V'chein le'inin atoifa. The same thing is true as far as Hashem's Midah of goodness. For example, Miriam himtina l'Moshe sha'achas. Miriam waited when Moshe was in the basket. She waited for him a short time. Now, Shah Achas literally means 1 hour. However, Tosfos points out that it would mean actually less than that, because the Medrash calculates that Hashem's Midah Tova is 500 times the Midas Peronus. We see that because in the Aseret HaDibros, it says that Hashem remembers the Avedus of the fathers against the children for up to 4 generations, Al Shileshim Al Ribeim, if the children are still persisting in doing the same Avedus, that it says, V'oysa Chetzel La'alofim, that Hashem does kindness for 2,000 generations, V'oyavai L'Hashem Mitzvah, 2,000 divided by 4 is 500. So we see that the Midah Tova is 500 times the Midas Peronus. Now, the Mishnah is going to say that they waited for her for a week when she had Tzaras. You divide a week, 168 hours, by 500, you get somewhere like some Tosfos says 15 or 20 minutes. So it comes out that she was waiting over there only about 15 or 20 minutes, and then Bastia showed up. Marshall makes a calculation that actually there's a reason why there's a reason actually why to say Davka, why 20 minutes would be almost exactly why 1/500th of an hour of 7 days. I mean, why would Tosfos mention the possibility of 15 minutes? So there's a note further on in Marshall that maybe sometimes the Midah Tova is more than 500 times the Midas Peronus, and therefore you have to take that into consideration. Even Yaakov points out another matter as well. After all, they weren't going to be traveling on Shabbos anyhow, so you have to deduct that from the calculation. And then once you do, and once you finagle over there, then you may find out that it was close to the 15 minutes that she was waiting there. Anyway, the point is, Shah doesn't always mean an hour. Just like you have the expression that Yesh Kono Lomib Shah Achas, it doesn't mean an hour. It means a small period of time, the same way over here. Anyway, the pasuk says his sister stood far away, waiting to see what's going to happen with him. Therefore, the whole Jewish people waited for her a whole week in the Midbar. When she had Saras at the end of Parashas Va'aloyscha, so she was quarantined outside the camp for 7 days. The people did not travel until Miriam was gathered in. Meaning, in other words, Marsha points out, the pasuk afterwards says, Va'acha noso al mechatzeres. After that, the people traveled from Chatzeres, which is where this took place. Now, obviously, they're not going to leave her behind, but the point is, in other words, why does the pasuk have to mention the point, why does it have to say those words, Va'omle noso ade osef Miriam? We would understand already that once she was well, then they resumed traveling. So it's making a special point that they stayed for an entire week until she was cured.
That's a little bit big.
And Achdos was big. Well, it's also Miriam, you know, they're not going to leave her over there, but yeah. There is actually a Medrash that says something along the lines of that they thought maybe we should be traveling, isn't it time to, but they can't find Moshe, they can't find Aaron, they can't find the Ananiah covered, and they realize something is wrong over here, and they start asking, and they find out what happened, and then everybody is going to wait. Tosfos, by the way, brings up a side point that sometimes on the face of it we see that the Midas Peronus is greater than that, because for example you have by Schar it says when a person the Gemara says that when a person learns Torah for 1 day it's as if he learned for a whole year, which is 365 times as much, but then by Peronus you have the same thing, one for each 1 day the Meraglim were away, they had to spend 1 year in the Midbar. So there you see that Peronus and Torah seem to be equal. So Maharshal says that the fact is, what we mean is, we do find, at least by Miriam, that was 500 times as much. So therefore, so we see, in other words, by Midrash, so we find, in other words, we see that it was that 365 times as great. So therefore, yes, there can be Midatova that can be greater than that. Tosfos Yom Tov makes a different point as well. It's Yosef brings something similar from Yafei Tarya. Listen, the 40 years that they were in the desert was actually a chesed, because it meant that this way, at least everybody, and nobody's going to die particularly young. Everybody who was 20 years old by the Chet Meraglim, which is the earliest age at which they're punishable in Hashemayim, will live until 60 at least. So therefore, of necessity, they had to be 40 years in the Midbar. So that can't be considered really, it is a Peronos, obviously, but it can't be considered that's a greater Peronos than it would have been if they had spent there only one day for every day that the Meraglim had been away, because then it would mean everybody would have to die inside of 40 days. The Mishnah continues. Another example: Yosef zocha likber esaviv. Yosef had the schus to bury his brother, to bury his father. What?
His father.
Yeah, his father Yaakov. Now, of course, all the Shvatim were involved, but Yosef was the head of it. Maharsha points out, after all, you have one pasuk that says first the pasuk says for the pasuk mentions Vayal Yosef likber esaviv, and then afterwards it says Vayalu Vayisu Yosef bonav, and it mentions all the children. So it means, in other words, that Yosef is like the main one over there, and all of them are kind of like auxiliary. So Yosef had the schus to be involved in that. In ve'echav gadol miYosef, and there's nobody greater among his brothers than him, because he was in effect a king among in the time. Shenem vayal Yosef likber esaviv. The pasuk says Yosef went up to bury his father. Vayal imegam rechav gam poroshim, and chariots and horsemen also went as part of the entourage. Milon of God or Yosef. So then, in that case, we find also as Midah Keneged Midah, who is greater than Yosef? Shall be asked by Ela Moshe, that who was involved in taking out Yosef's body from Mitzrayim and bringing it to Eretz Yisrael so it can be buried is Moshe. Moshe, that it was no less than Moshe Rabbeinu that was involved in that. It wasn't delegated to anybody less. So this is also Midah Keneged Midah. Maharsha points out that you have the same kind of thing. In other words, Yosef was the main actor when it came to bury Yaakov, but you also had the other Shvatim participate as well. The fact is, with Yosef, it's the same kind of thing as well. Moshe took Yosef's bones out of Mitzrayim, but he didn't wind up bringing him to Eretz Yisrael. The rest of the Jewish people did and buried him in Shechem. So it's the same kind of thing, that there's mainly one great person involved, but then you have other lesser people that are involved as well. Now, in that same vein, with Moshe himself, who deserved a reward for that. Moshe zocha ba'atmas Yosef. Moshe had the schus to be involved with the bones of Yosef. Ein godo memeno b'Yisrael. And there's nobody greater among the Jewish people than Moshe, and yet he didn't delegate it to somebody lesser. Shenema v'yikach Moshe es atmas Yosef. Moshe took the bones of Yosef with him. Well then, mi lanu godo m'Moshe. Well then, who is there greater than Moshe? Shemenis asik v'yel shechina. The one that was involved in burying him is none no less than the shechina itself. As the pasuk says, he buried him in the valley by Har Nevoah over there, by Baal Peor. Now there is an explanation. Rashi brings on the pasuk. There is an explanation from Rabbi Shmuel that the Yikbar Oisei means who covered a satmar, that Moshe buried himself. But here the Mishnah is understanding not like that. That Vayikbar refers to Hashem, that Hashem's Shechina buried Moshe. And in fact, it's not only about Moshe that it says that the Shechina is involved with him. Elal kol tzaddikim, really all tzaddikim are like that as well. Shenema, as the pasuk of Aholach lefanecha tzidkecha, your righteousness will walk in front of you. Kvoid Hashem yasfecha, the glory of Hashem will gather you in. So gather you in. In other words, a person will be gathered in to his grave by the glory of Hashem. Now, the question is, a lot of the Mephoshim ask in that case, the Mishnah is trying to make a point that Moshe is greater than everybody else, but we're saying if we're saying that all the tzaddikim have the exact thing, then in what way does Moshe have something greater than all the other tzaddikim? So first of all, Maharsha explains like this. Here we're saying that Hashem was involved in burying Moshe's body, because after all, nobody knows where he's buried, so therefore it had to be Hashem himself be involved. By the tzaddikim, it's not so much the bodies is being handled by Basal Adam. It's the neshama is being handled by Hashem. Fine, but by Moshe, it's his body as well. And in fact, the fact is, Moshe's body was on an incomparably higher level than that of all of the tzaddikim, because after all, he had the 40 days and three times when he didn't eat and drink, anything on Har Sinai, and separated from his wife, I'm like, come Novi Kamoyu. So therefore, when we're saying that Hashem buried his body, we're talking about a body that's already halfway to being a neshama anyway. And all that, Eitz Yosef brings here from Tosfos Yom Tov another point as well, that here you have only Hashem. Hashem was the only one who was involved in burying Moshe, was by the tzaddikim. Hashem participates, but you have people that are participating as well. So we're saying Hashem does participate, El Al Kol Tzaddikim, but not exclusively, unlike by Moshe, it was exclusively Hashem. Okay, so the Gemara says, Piska v'chem in an atoiva Miriam. So we're saying the same thing when it comes to goodness, it's midah k'neged midah, as with the examples of Miriam and the rest of the examples in the Mishnah. So the first example with Miriam, we were saying that she waited for a short while, as Tosfos is saying, 15 or 20 minutes, and then they waited for her for a week. So the question is, midyomi, how is it the same? If we're saying v'chem in an atoiva, then it should mean it's exactly the same kind of thing. Well, she waited there for only a short time, and they're waiting for her for 7 days. So how is it midah k'neged midah? Amar Abaye, Abaye says, fine. Emot lin in atoiva ain't it kain. Fine, you have to correct the wording of the Mishnah. What it means to say is, with goodness, it's not like that, and the midah of goodness is much greater. The fact is, the Mishnah is using the wording, and so it is as far as good. So it has to be, in other words, that's comparable to the Puranas. Ela Amar Rava Hachikarma. What it means is v'chein le'in atoiva. When we say v'chein le'in atoiva, means the ba'osa midah. It's still midah k'neged midah. That's the point the Mishnah is making. Is not the amount of time. You still have the same concept of midah k'neged midah. She waited, so they waited. Below the midah toiva, merubah midah speranos. But the midah toiva is always going to be greater than midah speranos. So in this case, she waited for 15 or 20 minutes, and they waited for her for a week. Besides the point that Tosfos brought up before about Midas Peronis, Tosfos also points out that you have an example where Peronis turns out to be even greater than Tova, because in Hazinu you have that one Echa Yudif Echad Elef, that one Goy is able to chase and then cause to run away 1,000 Jews by Midas Tova. You have in the Brachas and in Bechukosai Chamisha Meya, that 5 Jews will be able to put 100 of the enemies to flight. So isn't the Peronis greater? And the answer is that Tosfos says fine, but the fact is that because in the Brachas you're saying that they're saying that they're going to be able to kill them. Menafloi Vechem Lefnechem Lachardim. When we say in the Peronis Echa Yudif Elef Echad Elef, doesn't mean that one goy is going to be able to kill 1,000 Jews. It just means it's going to make them run away. So therefore, it's still not as bad. So Marshall discusses it a little further in that connection. You find a Gemara that implies that the 1,000 is actually referring to killing, and that when there's a bracha on the Jewish people, that means that one Jew can actually kill 1,000 of the enemy. And Marshall discusses that point a little bit. Now let's talk about this matter of Miriam standing over there. The pasuk says, "Vatesatzav achosim irochik." His sister stood far away, ledeya maya osaloi, to know what's going to happen with Moshe. So Amar Rav Yitzchak, pasuk zeh kulei al shem shechina nema. This whole pasuk is actually hinting at the shechina was standing there. Meaning, in other words, even though the simple sense is that the simple sense is that just Miriam is standing there. Now, Maushra points out, in other words, the point is, because after all, why would the pasuk need to mention that point at all? It would be enough for us to tell us. Moshe was placed in the basket at the edge of the Nile. Then Baspare comes, and then when she has this baby and she doesn't know what to do with him, then Miriam comes forward and says, I'll find you a nursemaid. Why does it need to mention the point that she's standing there? So therefore, so we're understanding that it means that Hashem made the whole thing happen, l'mayla mitam badas, that, like this, here the Gemara is going to tell us later the whole thing, that Miriam had a nevuah, that my mother was going to have a baby who was going to redeem the Jewish people from Mitzrayim, and then when he was placed into the Nile, then everybody's giving up, and Amram and Yecheved both think it's hopeless, and she's waiting over there to see. So ultimately, this is all Hashem making everything happen, and then the Shechina is the Golus with the Jewish people, and therefore the Pasuk is actually hinting every word and every phrase. And that pasuk is representing the Shechina standing over there and overseeing what's going to happen. The Maharal makes another point as well. He says, if it just meant that Miriam is standing there of her own volition, then the word ought to be Vatisyatsev. The same way as you have Vayisyatsev in Loshon Zohar, Vatisyatsev would be the expression that we'd expected Loshon Nekeva. Vatisatsav is actually more a form that means she was made to stand over there. So therefore, the Gemara is darshaning that means, like the Shechina motive, the Eibishter put it in her mind and motivated her to stand there without her even herself realizing what's going on. Starting with Vatesatzav, Dichtig, the pasuk says, in connection with Shmuel, before he received his first nevuah, Vayovay Hashem Vayisiatzav, Hashem came and stood there, Vayikra Kafam Bafam, and he called out Shmuel like he had the 3 previous times, and that was Shmuel's first nevuah. So we see, in other words, Hashem is making everything happen, that Hashem is bringing Nevuah over there, just like you had with Shmuel. Achoiso, the Pasuk says, his sister, that refers to the Shechina. As the Pasuk says, Emor Lachochma, Achoisiot, say of the wisdom of Torah, you are my sister. So in this case, what it means is, Marashah says, the Shechina is in Golos with the Jewish people, so just like a brother and sister feel for each other, and they commiserate with each other, and when one is in trouble, the other one does everything they can to help, so it is with the Shechina and the Jewish people. The Pasuk says, Meirochik, as in the Pasuk, Meirochik, Hashem Niroli, from afar Hashem appeared to me, meaning in the schus of the Ovis who lived a long time ago, Rashi explains over there. Here it means, Marashah says, that you have the plan that Hashem is having over here is very distant from anything that people can imagine what's going to happen over here, and Hashem is making it all happen in his own unique way. The Pasuk says, Ledea, as the Pasuk says, Kikael Deus Hashem, Hashem is a God of knowledges, representing, in other words, that you have Hashem's knowledge is far beyond anything that we can comprehend. So Ledea, Hashem is using his knowledge, which is not something which is a whole different kind of knowledge than we have. Ma, the Pasuk says, Ledea ma ma'ya osaloi. The ma connects in, as with the Pasuk, ma Hashem alekef Hashem niyemach. We're towards the end of his life, Moshe is saying to the Jewish people, what does Hashem want from you, kiyum the yiras Hashem? And as the Gemara says, if the Altar brings in Tanya, also yiras milsa zutrasi he, and relative to Moshe, it is milsa zutrasi. So Moshe has the highest level of yira of Hashem, and therefore that's represented in this Pasuk by the word ma, representing, because of that is why the Shechina is standing over there and taking steps to save him. When it says Ye'osa, connects with the word Yasa Hashem Ladoni Bayis Neman, where Abigail says to David that Hashem will make for you, my master, a reliable house. You'll have a dynasty that will rule over the Jewish people. Or different girsa that's in the printed Gemara, is the Pasuk, Yasa, Hashem Alekim Dover, Hashem doesn't do anything unless he reveals it to the Nevi'im. So the same way, in other words, Hashem had already revealed to Miriam and Nevuah that her brother is going to be the one who takes the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and this is that brother. And when the Pasuk finishes off Loi, as in the Pasuk, Vayikra Loi, Hashem Shalom, where Gideon builds a Mizbeach and calls it Hashem Shalom, so therefore representing, in other words, that here, Hashem is going to bring the peace over here through Moshe, being in the basket and being saved by Bas Pare, etc., is going to bring about the Shalom of the Jewish people going out of Mitzrayim safely and securely. So the Shalom of the Jewish people. Lahavi al Yodei Shalom, Sheyetsu Yisrael B'Shalom Misham. Marshal says that the Jewish people will leave Mitzrayim in a state of shalom. So therefore, so Ledea Maya also Loi, the Loi over here refers to how Hashem brings peace in the world, and therefore how through Moshe being in the basket and saved by Bas Pare and raised in the palace, etc., all of that led to eventually Moshe being in position to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim and bring them to a state of shalom. So now the Gemara is going to begin darshaning a number of different psukim, how we got up to this point of Moshe being in the basket in the first place. So we're going to start from near the beginning of Parashas Shmos. The pasuk is Vayakam Melech Chodesh HaMitzrayim, Asher Lo Yada Es Yosef. A new king arose over Mitzrayim who did not know Yosef. So what does that mean? Rav or Shmuel? So Rav and Shmuel argue what that means. Chad Omer Chodesh Mamesh. One says it means literally a new king, as in the old king died and the new one took over. Others say that his gzeiros were new, but he's still the same old person. Marsha brings from a medrash that actually it was a third possibility. What happened was, the medrash says, Paro's advisors are trying to convince him to start issuing gzeiros against the Jewish people. And he says, what are you talking about? Yosef was that benefited our whole country, would have all died of starvation without him. How could you want us to treat his people like that? So they deposed him from the kingship for 3 months. He's Ois king. And then he couldn't take it anymore, and then he said, fine, I'll go along with whatever you guys say. So then according to that, in a certain sense, it's a melech chodesh in the sense that he's being reaccepted as a new king. But nevertheless, it still is the same old person. Marshall says also the opinion that Nishad Shuk Zeroysev can say the word Vayokom can actually mean, sometimes you have, Vayokom means to stand up against as an enemy. So Vayokom, melech chodesh means now he stood against them as an enemy. So, Manda Omer Chodesh Mamesh Tichtiv Chodesh. Listen, the Pasuk says Chodesh, so it means at face value means that he's actually new. The one who says it's the same old king, but he had new Xeris, is the like Sidva Yomas Vayimlech. Because after all, usually when you have a new king, the Pasuk says the old king died and then the new one took over. Here, where it doesn't say that, then that may hint that it's the same king, says this Mandomer. In which case, what would he mean? That he doesn't know Yosef. David Domi commandal Yoda, like, that means that he's pretending as though he doesn't know what Yosef did for Mitzrayim. There's a sikha where the Rebbe talks about in Chelik Tes Zayin that we often find machlokas in that vein between Rav and Shmuel in different places in Shas, where Rav tends to take things according to the surface chat, and Shmuel likes to look more at the context. So since the surface chat of the word chodosh is new, then therefore Rav, the Rebbe explains that generally when we have, even though the Gemara is saying chad omer, chad omer, and it's not specifying who said who, generally speaking it'll mean that Rav, the first named, said the first thing, and Shmuel, the second named, said the second thing. So then it would mean that Rav looks at the word chodosh, well it means chodosh, so that's that. Whereas Shmuel is looking at the context again, because it doesn't say vayomas vayimlech, and therefore that forces us to say that chodosh doesn't mean literally. Then the Rebbe makes another interesting point in that sikha as well. The argument may actually be, when Pare acted and did what he did, was it worse from the point of view of Ben Adam LaMokim or Ben Adam LaHaveri? Now you have like this, the Pare of Yosef's times, we know when Yaakov came to Mitzrayim that he honored Pare very highly and gave him a bracha that the Nilos should rise whenever he comes there. So if you say it's the same old Pare, then in a way what he's doing, the fact that he considers himself a god, in a way is not as much of an insult to Hashem. Because after all, he has a certain twisted logic to say, you know what, I was honored by Yaakov and therefore I have a right in my Goyish cup way of thinking to consider myself a god. Right. But then in that case, then it's much worse in Ben Adam LaHaveri. Then you were actually there when you said, and you were living when Yosef did what he did. How could you now treat the Jewish people this way? Whereas if we say Melech Chodesh, that it's actually a new king, then it kind of mitigates what he does to the Jewish people. Listen, okay, you know, Yosef is decades ago. Maybe he doesn't know the history as well. But then in that case, what gives you the idea that you can declare yourself a god? So in that case, then we're saying he's much worse on the Ben Adam LaMokim level. Ian Yaakov also mentions over here a point that as far as this business of the Nilus rising towards him, did that in fact pass on from one Pare to the next? Or was it only the Pare that Yaakov had given the bracha to, or does it continue in future generations as well? So therefore the Gemara mentions elsewhere, the Gemara brings another machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, whether Pare, why was he going to the Nilus every day? One opinion is to do Kishuf and the other is to consider himself an Avodah Zarah, so that'll depend whether the water is rising towards him, in which case that gives him an excuse to think of himself as an Avodah Zarah and higher even than the Nilus or not. So the Pasuk says, Vayomer al Amos, the Pare says to his people, Hine am b'nei sor rabba otzum imenu, behold, this Jewish people are more mighty, are more numerous and more mighty than us. This expression, Am B'nei Yisrael, by the way, is an interesting one. Reb Shamshon Nefal Hirsch has an interesting vote on it. He says what he's saying is, look at this. These people are B'nei Yisrael. They're all descendants of the one man Yisrael, also known as Yaakov. And here all of a sudden, there's this gigantic Am. How did this happen? Tono, who hits for the Eitz Tchila? So we learn in a Braisa, he was the one who started with this idea of harassing and persecuting the Jewish people. Shenema Vayoyim Olama is the Pasuk is saying he said to his people. I guess even according to the Medrash that they deposed him, that they were the ones who came up with the idea first, but now that he's reinstated as king, then he's the one who's taking the initiative. Lefichach loko hu tchila. Therefore, when it came to the Makkos, he was the first one to suffer from it. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, v'cha, and on you, over amcha, and your people, over chavadecha, and all of your servants, yalo atzardim, the frogs will come up against you. So we see that he was the first one to get from it. Now, Marsha points out that you have before that, when Moshe warns him, he tells him, when Moshe warns him, he says, and then, so there you could say, though, that listen, you know, the Pasuk is going to mention the more important first. But then, why is it saying, so then in that case, in this next Pasuk, why is it saying, if it's listing from the most important to the least important, Avadecha, your servants, Pare's own personal servants and ministers, are ahead of Avadecha. Therefore, or ahead of Amcha, I mean. So we see that no, that he got it first, then Amoy, and then last of all Avodav. So that's what he got for that's what he got for starting for being the one to initiate the persecution of the Jewish people. Yom Yen Mashiach Gola. Chesir. And the Rebbe was talking in Tashin and Aleph that lately we see that the Umas Ha'olam are doing actions of Toiv and Chesed. And demonstrating with that they believe that Yesh Balabayis for Birazu, that this mansion of the world has an Eivishter who runs it, and this is the preparation for V'hoysal Hashem HaMelucha by the Gula HaSidah. We see actually here, shortly before, the Rebbe had talked that Sicha, that we saw how Umas Ha'olam are preparing this way for the Gula through Tzedakah and Chinuch, which Tzedakah and Chinuch both are fundamentally based on this concept of Yesh Bala Bayis for Birazu. Nowadays also we have various legislative things that they're working on to improve in these areas and demonstrate that we recognize that the Eibishter runs the world. So it's also so here we're a full generation later, but you still see the same kind of thing that this is all preparing for Yemos HaMashiach. Okay, continuing with halachas of Rosh Chodesh. So now on Rosh Chodesh we say halal. So you say halal standing. You can't interrupt in it. The actual dinim of interrupting in the middle of halal are the same as doing Krishna. Namely, whatever, for example, you can interrupt in the middle of Birkas Krishna for Oman Yehesh, and in the middle of the Parashiyas Shema for Oman Yehesh Meiraba, for example. So you can do the same thing during halal, but and then certain other things as well. You have in the newer Siddurim, you have tables in the back that show what you can say at various points. So it's the same kind of thing. You should say halal with a tibur. So if, suppose a person comes late to shul, and they're almost up to halal, so then he should say halal with them first, and then daven. Now, the Rebbe adds only if he's not going to miss Krishna thereby. If he's in the middle of Psukah de Zimra, and if he's in the middle of Psukah de Zimra from after Baruch Shama until Oz Yashir, then what you do is you actually stop there in the middle of Psukah de Zimra. You say halal there with the tzibur without a bracha, because Baruch Shama and Yishtabach will count as a respective brachas and halal, but this is only on Rosh Chodesh, because since Rosh Chodesh and the last 6 days of Pesach, you say halal b'dilug, so therefore it doesn't really require a separate bracha, and therefore Baruch Shama and Yishtabach can count as the brachas for it. But when you're saying halal shalom, then you can't do that, because then you have to have an independent birkas hamitzvahs at the beginning and at the end of it. Now, if you're saying halal and you're not betzibur, if you have at least two other people, then you should say the hoidu and say it in the responsive way, like the chazan and the tzibur does, because hoidu implies that you're speaking to other people. But otherwise, as it says in the Siddur, you still do repeat some parts. Basically, you repeat the parts that basically you say then, if you're davening the Yachid, you're davening Halal, you would say only the parts that the Tzibur says in response to the Chazan, namely Hodu once, and then Yoimar, and then Hodu after each of the remaining three Psukim.